This is the 15th interview with Sarah Rosner on November 13, 1973, in her home, as usual. Although this interview was going to focus on her European trip, and particularly her experiences with labor people in Europe. Over lunch, we got into a discussion of Haymarket, since the previous Sunday had been the anniversary of the Haymarket massacre. A question regarding a meeting with Mrs. Mark Starr then led into some digressions about Elizabeth Gurley Flynn and the communists. This flowed into various discussions about the treatment of women by the anarchists, and then about the responsibility of women for their own position. A good part of the interview focused on the question of how unions can function under capitalism. A very significant part of the interview came towards the end, when we discussed where some of her toughness came from, and she described how she was a tomboy even as a child. Also, the relationship between she, Hilda, and Rose was discussed in an attempt to determine if this was an unusual relationship and how the kind of closeness of that relationship might be related to her concern for women. Sarah had not been feeling at all well the day prior to the interview and had spent the entire day in bed, but during the interview she seemed to be all right.
I think that they have made a great contribution to the labor movement. The anarchists in their days, I went along and I tried to learn something about them. I admired some of them more than others.
Did you ever meet Parsons?
No, I didn't.
She stayed in Chicago, didn't she?
Yeah. I didn't. As the... If I did, I wouldn't know. I didn't.
I want to ask you some questions about your trip. On your way over, you say that Mrs. Mark Starr was going to come visit you. Now that's Helen Gates Starr?
I didn't hear that.
When you stopped in New York, you made a note that Mrs. Mark Starr was coming to visit you.
In New York?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, she
came. Is that Helen Gates Starr?
Yes.
Now, how did you know her?
Well, she was in Brookwood. She was teaching in Brookwood. She took Polly's place for a while. She took first year English. See, Polly was teaching second year English.
Wasn't she also at the Hull House in Chicago?
Who are you talking about?
Helen Gates Starr.
Oh, no, that's... I mixed up with Helen Gates Starr is from the Hull House you're talking about. She was in the 1910 strike. I don't know, you got things mixed up there,
well,
honey.
Who's Helen Gates Starr was married to Mark Starr? or not?
She's Helen Norton is married to Star.
Oh. Now, who came to see you?
Helen Norton, Star.
Oh, and she's the one who was at Brookwood?
Yeah.
Oh, that's where I was confused. Yeah. Now, yeah. Were they related?
Oh, no. Helen is from Kansas City, it is, as far as I know. I remember her coming from Kansas City.
And so she taught at Brookwood?
Yes, she was at Brookwood.
And was she then involved, after Brookwood, did she remain involved in the Amalgamated?
No. She had nothing to do with the Amalgamated. She had nothing to do with the Amalgamated.
Well, you kept in touch with her over the years?
I did for a long time. I kept up for some time, but mostly I kept up with the Goldens, who was the regional director.
Of what?
He was in charge of Brookwood. Then later he went to the Steelworkers Union. He was originally a railroad worker. He was married to Dora. He was Irish and she was Jewish. Oh, I gotta give you the whole thing about that. I got a whole book about her. With Elizabeth Curry Flynn. Elizabeth Flynn.
Now, you met Elizabeth Curry Flynn?
Yeah, I spent some time with her. Going south.
When was that? After Brookwood?
At Brookwood.
Oh.
At Brookwood.
Now, was that, let's see, so by then she was already communist, though, wasn't she? By then?
It was between 25 and 26, I think. Sure. I don't know whether she was or not. I don't think so, because if she was, I didn't know about it, because I kept aloof. I fought the communists at Brooklyn. So there was a split and there was a feud going on, which I didn't like. I didn't think it belonged there. I didn't think Brooklyn was established for that purpose. I thought it was a school to prepare students so they'd have the proper tools to work with in the labor movement. They should be able to deal intelligently with employers or employees, and with members in the union, prepare them so that they can cope with properly.
What, was the feud among the students or among the faculty?
Both. See, Arthur Calhoun was accused of being one. He was not. This is what I was trying to tell
Len DeCo.
Yeah. I was never coming into mind. He had advanced ideas. And certainly. But I don't think that he believed in dictatorship or suppress thought of any kind. The thing is this, that it's all right to you fight for freedom only the way you want it, but not when it comes to me. Don't fight me. I want it my way. And that's the communist. That's how it struck me. And that's what I didn't want. I didn't like.
Well, Sarah, how did you happen to meet Elizabeth Curley Flynn?
At Golden's.
Was this in New York City?
The Brookwood Labor College.
Yeah, but where did you see her? Was that in New York? Or she was at the college?
In New York.
Oh, she came to the college?
Yeah.
Oh.
I think I got the date when I went. Usually there was somebody there when Clint Golden was out on the road collecting money or funds or something. There was always somebody there. That group going.
What did you think of her?
She was a smart cookie. Very vivacious. Did you know her? You
didn't. No, I read her book.
Yes, her book. I didn't read her book. What does she say in her book?
Oh, I'll bring you a copy.
No, what does she say? What is she?
It's an autobiography, mainly.
What does she talk about, mainly about the strike?
She talks about Lawrence and about Patterson strike.
Pacific strike, yes.
And then she goes into the later things, and then when she became a communist. But she talks about her early days in the Wobblies.
Yes, I know she was lovely. See, but before I so-called found myself, I don't know whether I'm still looking for myself. I'm telling the truth, you see. I felt that I found myself when I joined the Socialist Party, because that came the nearest to my way of thinking. The more revolutionary the thing appears, the better I liked it. When I got acquainted with the Wobblies, this is it. No, I went to their lectures, I went to their conventions, I attended their meetings, and I was inspired. I picked up little things here and there. And that's it. This is it. I came home, read about literature. You find literature, some of it that I never read, some of it that I read more than once. Then I would follow the anarchist, attend Emma Goldman's lectures. I was a subscriber to the Good Earth, Mother Earth, whatever it was. I don't remember even the name of
Mother Earth.
And there was other publications. I'd buy the literature and read. That's it. This is what I want. This is where I belong. No, that's not it. But the communist, I could never fit in. I can never. I won. I listen. They never inspired me. I never felt that. I was very much inspired by the Wobblies. Because of the industrial union, which I still believe is right. I think the workers should be together. There should be one union, because it has to be so-called localized, because you can't have a tailor dictate or make conditions for steel workers. They don't know anything about it. They gotta have somebody to know the trade. But in the main, the philosophy or the goal, the aim, as the original preamble calls for, an amalgamated, eventually should belong to the working class. I mean, that was their aim, right? And that I agreed with, and I still do. I still hope that someday it'll come to pass. So, well, so it didn't work here. I'm going to do another minute in there. And originally that was it. So I got stuck there. Politically, well, to say that it's the lesser evil. I realize it's wrong. I'm not fooled by it. Inwardly, I'm not fooled by it. But I'm only living today.
Well, Cyril, how did you see those other groups treating women? Like the Wobblies and the anarchists and the...
Nah, I didn't like it. You see, I don't mind. I'm a monogamist. If you know what I mean. I don't like promiscuity. I don't believe in that. I don't believe in that people will make me love you. But I don't believe running from one to another. Never impressed me. And that was very prevalent in all these movements. And I couldn't take it. I said, I'm no angel. I was by far not an angel. But I didn't like certain things. Now, I know, for instance, certain, it went against my grain. It may be my upbringing, maybe my home environment. But the fact is, as you come across, that my first sexual experience was so tragic, I cried. Why did I cry? What is it? What the hell? What is it? And I was no chicken. I mean, I was not 60 years old, or 14 or 15. But it was, I wanted to get drunk. And very seldom, and I didn't drink under those conditions. To lead myself. I mean, looking back at these things, killing myself all and hiding the thing that I was brought up against. I don't know whether I can put that down exactly in print the way I'm trying to express it. But, so these are the things that I objected to in the radical movement. I didn't like this promiscuous.
But well, aside from that, did you feel that they were really concerned about the welfare of women? For instance, when you met Elizabeth Gurley Flynn, was she concerned about women workers the way you were?
Who? Elizabeth Flynn? I couldn't tell you exactly. I couldn't tell you. I didn't know her that well. So I can't tell you exactly. I'm trying to think who would outside of you would find people like that. You would only find in the Women's Trade Union League, Jane Addams and Frances Perkins, that they were absolutely interested in forwarding the women's movement. Yeah, but well, you take like the Jews say, scratch a groin, you find antisemitism. It's not true, because there are plenty of groin that they're genuine. But very seldom that you go and find the ego in a man. They'll even fight for the rights of women. comes down to it, they want to be it. They want to have the upper hand. So it really takes the woman to liberate the man. They gotta convince them that unless women have equality, they are enslaved. And I have proven that in a very peculiar way, like my whole life is peculiar. Now am I drifting?
Go on.
This is what I pointed out. As I blame the women for wars, men only help create. But the burden is left for the woman. They raised the son, the daughters, they nursed them. Do you really love your son? Why don't you put your life down instead of letting him go to war? Why do you blame the men? Why don't you free the men? Now, it's contradictory, isn't it? It's a contradiction. I said, if you want to, you have to free the men first. Well, that's the only way you can free them. If you free them by not allowing them to be killed, then you have freedom. That's number one. Now, let's come home. Let's come home to where I belong, to the Union. Why do you blame the Union for not giving you women a chance? Why do you allow yourself to be bought by with a kiss, with a pat on the back, or by buying a lunch, or taking you out for the night, taking you to a show, you brought up? Get together. You're in the majority right now. You won't always be, because you're killing up the men. The wars are killing him up. There are more women right now. At least take advantage of it. Get together in reality. Don't be jealous. Don't show your jealousy. She's getting more money. She's got a better bundle, a bigger bundle. When this is coming down to brass tacks, this is what's happening. That's why you haven't, women are not having what's coming to them. And that's what you told me about this person at the recent convention, a conference that they had. I don't know how it'll work. It'll probably work like they have in the Constitution, the amalgamated. Equal pay for equal work.
But I think what's important is that the women apparently got themselves together enough.
I hope so.
To bring that kind of pressure.
I hope so. I hope I'm wrong. It's about time. And this is what I was writing about. And this is why I say it's up to us. It's up to the women to do it. That's what I've been fighting all the time. Why? Why is it? Like I started out, if you recall, that basin puller, now they don't have it. You know, it was done by hand. The stitches were so tight, and it was so hard to pull with a bobkin. They had a bone bobkin. And honest to goodness, they had half of their flesh. And their wages were so low in comparison that. And the work was so difficult and so hard By the time the day got through, the evening, with 8 or 9 hours that they worked, on top of another day when they were organized, how do you compare it to the cutters? There's no comparison. Absolutely no comparison. And I used to tell that to Frank Rosen, and he said, "You're crazy." I'm not crazy. It's just that I told him what. I said, "You got pants on and I've got shorts on." I mean, that's what it is. Now, is there anything else?
See, that's why I think when you told me last week about the suit.
Yeah.
First you said, "I'm glad." And then you said, "No, I'm not glad." I mean, what you're happy is to see the women getting organized.
Yeah.
But you're unhappy that it's being, that in public a suit is being brought against the union.
No, that's right. I still feel that way. You see, as long as we live under a capitalist system, what are you doing? You fight it out inside. This is what I don't care. I am not going to wash my clothes in public. My dirty clothes in public, no. And it was somebody very, very so-called big, a union person, just recently told me about taking it to... I thought to myself, "You dirty
clothes." About what?
They were going to sue the union officials.
Hmm.
No, I don't believe in that. I don't believe in it. Get them out. You have the power. Well, where are you going? To the capitalist black? To the capitalist? You want Nixon to do it for you? No, I don't believe in that. Mm-mm. I don't. See, this is what I believe in, industrial unionism. I don't know whether it makes sense, but this is the way I feel. This is what I feel. Now, I don't think that Nixon is going to straighten me out. But then, Nixon's form of government will set me free. Uh-uh. It's going to be the workers. I also know from history, from the little that I know, from my own experience, that revolutionary changes will have brought betterment for the average worker was not instituted by the lower class, by the ignoramus. Never. I don't know why, but that is the truth. Can you point out to me one revolutionary change that was brought about by such element?
Well, in Cuba, probably, to begin with.
In Cuba?
I mean, the leaders weren't from the lower class.
Well, this is what I'm trying to tell you. All through history, you take, if you want to use analogous comparison, take as much as I certainly didn't agree and don't agree with the type of government that Lenin and Trotsky instituted, or the wonderful institute, the dictatorship to suppress freedom of thought, freedom of expression. But no. Was it the music that brought about the revolution? Was it the peasants? The tear of the soil that brought about the revolution? Or was it the Lenin died.
Then why do you put your faith in going to the workers?
What?
Then why do you put your faith in going
why to the workers? Why do I say that little paper that I gave you, educated by an educated working class, the leadership must be progressive. And you can't win with an ignorant working class. I have faith. I have faith that eventually they will be educated and understand. To have a world without leadership, well, that's going beyond my comprehension. Right now, I leave that to bigger minds than mine. I know what you mean.
But, Sarah, don't you feel that the unions, all unions nowadays, are as much a part of the capitalist system as the courts? And they're helping make the machinery run smoother, really, aren't they?
Isn't it a fact they tell you? You have big industries, you have big unions, you have big labor leaders. They look like labor leaders, they look like bankers, sure. That's all, but there's still a difference between many, as rotten as he is, between many and Nixon. I don't care what you say. There is still a difference.
What do you think the difference is?
The difference is that many will stand up for the workers and Nixon when they want another nickel for the workers, he blew pants. Right? If you talk bread and butter, you're not talking philosophy now. You're not talking long-range programs. Is this wrong?
Well, see, I think, for instance, with the 1919 agreement, or even beginning with the 1910 agreements with Hart, Schaffner, and Marx, unions in this country, even the most revolutionary ones, were successful because what they did basically was to help the capitalist system function better. They promised no stoppages, that you went through a certain way to get something done, and I think that's why they were accepted, except for unions like the Wobblies, which did not do, which wasn't a union in the same sense. But the agreements, you know how you felt about stoppages. You just went and did it if you felt it was wrong. Against the union, though.
Yeah, I went along with that. Well, interesting. We are living under the capitalist system, right? If you want to knock your head against an iron wall, you go ahead and do it. That's why we have two arms. Right? You have a political arm, you have the industrial arm. Now you can't kid yourself. If I say, if you're speaking of a long-range program, a philosophical program, I certainly that would be my dream. But under the capitalist system, isn't it far better? Isn't it far better that we cooperate, that I don't cut up material and throw down the drain in the toilets and crack the toilets and smash things and destroy things and have you go back for a dime for carfare? I mean, realistically speaking, down to earth. Sure, if I do that, the price of the garment will go up because so much was destroyed. So I'd say to John, the cutter, don't do that. Because the price of bread first will go up and this, and then will go up. So it's better that I cooperate. So let the manufacturer make his profit if you want him in business. It's easy to put. If he can't pay you a living wage, put him out of business. I was called down for it, yeah. So if he can't pay you a living wage, get out. I was like, yeah, I had that experience. But that's under the capitalist system.
Well, Sierra, wasn't there some early plans in the Amalgamated to set up their own factories? And weren't there some occasions when they actually opened up some cooperative factories?
Yes.
Now, what happened to all of those ideas?
Yeah. It didn't work. It didn't work. Why is it? I often... because it's a capitalist system, and it's a quest for power, and you can't just isolate yourself. You can't. Can you compete now? If they opened up a factory, a manufacturer went out of business, they took over. They wanted to run it. They saved the jobs for the workers. Yeah. It's my union. It's my. I do what I want. There was a lack of discipline. There wasn't enough discipline. It didn't work. If there was a whole new social structure, where there would be controlled by committees from the workers' committee, or in your way of thinking, or for that matter, my dream way of thinking, where the human being will be so sophisticated that I won't drop anything and pick up, because I don't want my fellow man to clean after me, I'll clean after myself. You know, I understand all those things. But you know, that doesn't exist now. Are they ready for it?
Have you read about
that? Are they ready for it?
Let me tell you about something.
Yeah.
Have you read?
Yeah, they do get profit.
That's a bunch of people in Yale.
Well, that, again, so I'm asking you, so who gets the benefits from it?
Well, in this case, it's very...
Yes.
The benefits still going to the capitalists because they're the ones...
Because we live under the capitalist system. Exactly. It's the same way. Now, I came in. No, but I'm ordinary, uninformed rabbi's daughter. And there was 6 cents repair work on a garment, on a coat. 6 cents on a coat. I came in and I brought it down to 2 cents. After that time, I was called Emma Goldman, which I accepted as a compliment. No, I said, this is Emma Goldman's work. That's what Emma Goldman does. You're telling me these things. You're telling me about Fontana. I am telling you what I live, what I know, what I did. And that's only one phase of it. You know, I was still then. It's up to you. You want to fire the manager? You want the manager? You don't need to tell him to go. I said, I'm not looking for a pound of flesh. See, I don't want him. I just want him to be decent to the workers. And then, was I a revolutionist? Did I make a revolution? I didn't make a revolution. That's being done by, I wouldn't say that it's being done every day, or by everybody. So you're pointing out Fontana. I'm telling you this was not yesterday, not today. I did it when it wasn't. And it was a little bit harder to do those things than it is today.